The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International.
My name is Lydia and this is Brent.
Hi, I'm Brent.
And we are doing...
Brent and Lydia talk Starman. We're getting there.
Okay. Right.
This is our 29th episode. And in this episode, we are going to talk about Starman Volume 2, Issue 26.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm still having a weird infection thing, so this is me sucking on my lozenge.
So and you know, we might have a few sniffles, a few coughs in the background. If it gets too bad, we'll you know, try and cut him out. But hopefully, I mean, okay, so a little behind the scenes here, because I listen to some podcasts and some like really, really do a great job of editing out a little sniffles, but sometimes I do kind of feel like you can kind of hear when the conversation kind of gets choppy. You know, and that's why, like, for me, I kind of think, like, unless we're having one of those moments where we can just kind of pause and kind of turn off the mics for a big just coffee, I'd almost rather just let a little cough slide in. That way we can just kind of keep our patter going. Hopefully listeners kind of feel the same way, but you know, let us know.
I'll just like turn to one side and cough into a pillow if I have to. It's right here. Yeah, but okay. Okay. So, Starman issue 26.
Okay. January of 96.
Yes, January of 96. Okay. Do you remember that one time we talked about this, what do you call it? Someone became a vitamin from the Flintstones. From the Flintstones became a vitamin.
Betty.
Betty? Because, again, I don't know why, January 96, here she is again as a Flintstone vitamin. Was it, like, are we, because you did November 96. December 96? So is it a printing thing that's gone wrong?
There was the one set of issues where they had, like, printed the wrong date, and we got confused, like, wait, which date did we talk about? Was that the date we were supposed to talk about? I remember us having that conversation. I don't know if that conversation made it on air or not.
Okay, because what I noticed was yesterday you did December 96. So, this issue should be January 97.
Yeah,
but there's a mistake in it, so...
See, now I feel like I have to go back to double-check our digital copy to see, did I make the mistake, or did the comic make the mistake?
No, the comic made a mistake.
Whew. Good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but
yes,
unfortunately, because I couldn't really find something that I was really interested in for January 97, my little tidbit is from January 96.
We'll allow it.
Okay, well, why I chose it is because January 96, January 27th actually, was the very first time Germany, it got a Holocaust Remembrance Day. So technically that was the first one. I don't know how the second one came, like how they carried it out, because this issue is January 97, right? So the thing that they had with January 96 was there was still a lot of people who weren't, especially like German Jews, they weren't very happy in January 27, 1996, that it wasn't a special thing. In 96, during a parliament session, they observed the day in Germany. The German parliament observed the day on 19th January and not the official date of 27th January. So, yeah, and that was one thing, but a lot of people were like, hey, at least they honored the victims finally in January 96. So there's no like record of whether they improved in January 27, 1997. But because Germany chose to commemorate this day, it was huge news, because they were the first European country to declare the date as an official day of remembrance for the victims of Nazism. So because Germany did this, the UN decided to establish International Holocaust Remembrance Day. Wow. And that's why it's a big thing. Yeah. So it was like, it had been going on for 50 years or something before it became official. But yeah, it only got official in 1996, January 27. So and why it's like so impressive, I think, is because it's unusual. Like, it's written in this article on time.com, it's unusual for a country to remember something that was such a negative part of history.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but the justification of it was, you know, they must, and I'm quoting the then president, must continue to remind future generations to be vigilant and to find a form of memory that reaches towards the future. So, I know, I think, like, right now, looking at this issue, I wonder how it was like for the world, because it would have been the second time they were remembering this thing. And I know, first time it's like we don't really know what's going on, but the second time I think that might have been really significant. So that kind of jumped out at me, you know, this second time I wouldn't say celebrated, but they remembered the Holocaust officially, even for the UN, it didn't, even though it followed suit, the day itself, International Holocaust Remembrance Day, it didn't actually become an official international day until 2006. So it was really late. So I don't know, kind of cool.
No, it is. I mean, it's just interesting for me to think about how that kind of connects with, you know, our current awareness. I mean, because, you know, my being an American means that I get the joy of feeling personally connected to a Trump White House. And, you know, one of the things that was a big, excuse me, moment was this past Holocaust Remembrance Day, the White House statement, you know, and this happens after Trump was sworn in, made no mention of the Jews during the Holocaust.
Okay.
And whereas, you know, I can definitely understand someone wanting to make a point that there were many groups of people who all need to be remembered during Holocaust Remembrance. You know, I know, like, for example, you know, gays and I believe would they, if they're Germanic, would they still count as Romani? I'm not quite sure. I often hear just gypsies, but I also have been told that can be considered a slur, so I don't quite know what term I should be using, but I know that they were also victims. But you know, I think regardless of how much you think other groups are in need of awareness, you know, I don't think taking away awareness from another group is the best way to do that. And then at the same time, you know, you and I both living in Japan, and not that we need to really open up that whole kettle of worms, but I think saying that Japan is not overly enthusiastic about anyone remembering its actions during World War II is a fairly accurate way of saying it.
And I don't know if you know this, but there was a Japanese occupation in Singapore for...
You know, I've heard that, but I don't really know much about it.
Yeah, basically, well, of course there were war crimes, and it was... we always hear that it was 3 years and 8 months, and we have to learn about it, because it's really a huge part of our very short history. There are war memorials, but the thing is, because Singapore is such a resource poor country, we have to present the facts. And yet, you know, not offend Japan because of the economy and the ties that we have with Japan and everything. So most of the younger generation grew up very tolerant of Japan. But there are some people who lived through that, they did not migrate to Singapore after the war. You know, they were there, one of the earliest settlers, and the indigenous peoples. So they still remember the war, and some of them don't use any Japanese products because it's still very deep-seated, and, you know, it was just bad during that time. But, you know, because I would say because of the Japanese occupation, Singapore realized that they could not depend on their colonial masters. So we fought for independence. It was a horrible thing to have happened, but... Yeah. I don't know if this is politically correct to say some good did come out of it. Yeah.
No, I mean, I can definitely understand that, you know. See how that would be the case. And I mean, you know, and just to, for my own clarity, like I don't think modern Japan needs to be punished for the actions of what happened in their history. However, you know, because revisionism and just flat out denial are really, really strong, both from big business and from the government, like those are things I take task with. Like I certainly don't think that someone, you know, should kind of want the prime minister to be punished for actions of that long ago, but I do think responsibility needs to be held for the continued dismissals of the past. But this is a Starman podcast, not a world history podcast. So I should probably leave it at that.
Okay, good idea. Yes, so that was my little tidbit for January 97, sort of.
And since we are talking about issue 26, I've got a little synopsis of it here, where Jack spins through a portal and ends up in the ghost Old West. Oh no, there's monsters and stuff and fights and, wait a minute, this isn't ghost Old West, it's hell, dun dun dun, where he sees, you know, Shade and Matt and a demon, and then they all get sent to their separate memory places types things, where Jack confronts someone who appears to be his mother, and Shade confronts someone who appears to be Merritt, and Matt confronts someone who appears to be Scalp Hunter, and they each, in their own way, have to pass a test without even knowing it is a test. And to give it all away, haha, they're heroic! And they win! And then they get sent back. And, you know, so do a lot of other people. Things are going to be interesting because of this. Not On for a synopsis, not too much really happened this issue, but oh man, I'm looking forward to talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk about it.
What do you think about this cover?
I don't know. It was very. Wait a minute. Why is Matt looking like? Is he gonna die? That was what I. Yeah, that was what I thought. Yeah, but considering that it's linked up with the other covers, I think it's the scariest out of all of them. The other one, the one in the middle, it had like the tree of life kind of thing going on. Right? And then 24, there were angels, right?
Yes.
So angels and then like tree of life kind of thing, and then hell. So heaven, earth, and hell. Suddenly we are in Norse mythology.
Wait, Norse mythology?
Yes, but you know, the levels, but then again this is like, no, they're not levels. Okay, fine. Because Norse mythology, there's a tree or something, right?
And then gotcha. I was thinking like I'm pretty sure this would count as a Judeo-Christian, but you know,
Yeah. Definitely Judeo-Christian now that I look at it. And the themes, though, very, am I right to say Michelangelo? I don't know.
My art history, not so strong, but so I can just nod and say, sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, but they, okay, before we talk about that annoying border thing that they kept, what do you have to say about the cover?
You know, I like it. I just, it's one of those things that the more I look at it, the more I find that I like. You know, it is kind of helped that because they are in hell this issue, there is that kind of thematic tie-in with what's going on. So I'll admit that does give a little plus to it. You know, I like that it's Matt, and Matt has been, well, maybe not compared to Shade, but he, of at least of our, you know, straight heroes, he's been the most tainted. And he does seem the most troubled by his own past. Because, I mean, Shade, whatever dirty deeds he's done, he doesn't seem to be entirely conflicted about them. You know, and I like this cover. There's the Statue of Judgment in the background. I like the fact that, you know, on the first couple of glances, the demons look like they're holding lightning bolts, but in fact they're snakes. You know, I think this is a very good cover that finishes up the third part, but also manages to stand on its own. You know, I don't, last time we kind of talked about how we did like the Shade one a lot. And I don't think I could really say which of the three would be my favorite, but I would definitely think the covers to 25 and 26 would be, you know, a bit more appealing to me as a cover than the one featuring Jack.
The Jack one was a bit tame.
Yeah. Should we open up?
Okay. That's me trying to imitate a dog.
Do we want to go ahead and get the border talk out of the way?
Yes, I don't like it. It's ugly. I don't know. It's like they try to make it more elaborate every time. Well, thanks for trying, but it's not really doing it for me.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all different, but...
And, you know, especially in this issue, where they also change the color of the border several times. And, you know, there never really seems to be a reason...
Yeah.
For the changing of the color of the border. Like, wait.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe the blues are with... No, wait. But that character's also... maybe the yellows are for... Wait, but yellow was... So just, you know... It felt like too distracting. Too much taking up space for no real gain.
Yeah. I mean, it's like... We get it. Yeah, I just didn't really like it. Yeah. Okay, it's published. It's 20 years old. We can't really.
Yep. And I mean, even though I'm not a fan of the borders, and I do hope that this is the last issue we'll see with them for a while, it's not like it destroys the reading experience. Like, oh, that's there. Well, good thing the story's still good.
Yeah. Okay, so. The story. We have Jack in this like cyclone kind of thing. Yeah. Like, can't help but think of The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And he's like spiraling into hell. And again, over here we have that drippy thing, the drippy art thing where like instead of, you know, the it's not, I don't know what it is. It might be sweat. It doesn't look like blood, but every time on this page, as like we can see it as well, every time they make a choice to have something dripping off someone, I find that more often than not, it's colored the same way as their skin or the fabric. Yeah, I don't, is that how it is for all comics?
No. I mean, it really depends. You know, I wish I really knew how advanced coloring would have been in the late 90s. Because for a while there, just with the coloring and the printing, getting something that small and specific wasn't always a surefire bet in comics. You know, but I can't say if in the 90s it would be there, but it definitely seems to be a stylistic choice.
Okay, got it. Thank you. Okay, anything you want to say about this?
I kind of like the whole the dialogue here. It how it serves the two purposes of him kind of not knowing what's going on and talking about the pain and, you know, like not quite remembering it, because it kind of shows this journey is taxing, you know, and kind of resets the clock a little bit, but it also sets us up very nicely for the page turn and the reveal of the kind of old west hell.
Yeah. When I flipped it, I was like, what is it with America and its obsession with the Wild West. Because, I don't know, maybe because I watched Westworld and I'm like, suddenly, this trope, this, when, you know, America's past, is it this?
Well, I mean, there've been people who have talked about how the Old West is a very, you know, I mean, no other world has, no other world, no other country has an Old West. Like, that somehow, so it becomes the image of something you want that's American and has that kind of hint of danger and, like, its own mystique. You know, but also I do kind of need to point out, admittedly in this, I don't know if it would be Tony Harris who decided to do the Old West, or if it would be James Robinson, who said, like, yeah, let's put him briefly in cowboy times. But just in case it was James Robinson, he is British.
Oh,
so,
okay.
So, it could just be that kind of him being like, nah, that makes it feel very American. Or it could be just because the Old West has its own kind of creepy mystique. I mean, ghosts and and Old West do kind of add a great flavor to stuff.
I see. Thank you for clearing that up. Because when I think about, like, period dramas in general, because I grew up watching a lot of Chinese period dramas, so there is a certain time that they're always set in, which means there is a favorite, you know, there's the time where things were really exciting, and they would set it during that time, like, especially in the early Qing dynasty, where they wanted to overthrow the emperor, or they would set it in the Tang dynasty, which is when civilization really flourished. You know, things like that. And then in Japan, they like to set it in Edo, because it's the closest, right? And then things like that. And then I was thinking, maybe, you know, the West, the Wild West with the cowboy thing, it's the same way with the U.S. I don't know.
I mean, it can be, because it's evocative of that, like, wanting to find yourself and wanting to, like, better your stars and wanting to get out there. You know, and it also gives lots of pivotal points, because depending on when you do it, it could be either even during or just after the American Civil War, you know, which adds its own little things. But, you know, I mean, at the same time, seeing as how this old Western bit really only exists for 3 pages, it might have just been, like, cool aesthetics, and because of the kind of gives us a hint towards the scalp hunter appearance later.
Well, very cool idea, though, you know, melting both ghosts and hell. The West and the Wild West and hell together.
I like the kind of demon language that things are made up of.
And, like, that there are actually signs. Like, some government in hell bothers to put up signs.
Well, yeah. I think possibly my favorite part of this page is if you look just underneath Jack's chin, there's, like, the green-faced, red-eyed, like, squid-face-looking guy.
Yep.
And I just, for something about it, that little character just makes me think, like, you know, here's this demon in hell who's probably, like, selling newspapers or buckets or something, and just like, oh man, I hope I really sell enough buckets so I can feed my little demon children, and I don't know, it just kind of makes me giggle every time I look at him.
Yeah, the citizens of hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. Alright, so this issue is called To Hell and Back, and it's the conclusion of the 3-part arc, and we have the creators writer. Will be introduced by Brent.
The writer, James Robinson. We have an assortment of pencilers. We have Tony Harris, who basically did anything including Jack. We had J.H. Williams, who did the shade pages. We had Gary Erskine, who did the matte pages. Wade Von Grobiger inked Tony Harris. Mick Gray inked J.H. Williams. Gary Erskine inked himself. It was all colored by Greg Wright, lettered by Bill Oakley, our assistant editor, Chuck Kim, editor, Archie Goodwin, Jack Knight, created by James Robinson and Tony Harris.
Thank you.
No problem.
Yeah. What can you say about the demonic animals on this page?
You know, I liked them. There was that moment where I did kind of have a thing of, since last issue, our interpretation of the demon was kind of a goat-headed creature. I was wondering, I did find it odd that the animals we saw were also goat-headed. Because, I don't know, I just, you think if you're the kind of king demon in an area, which we're kind of shown he is, you'd be like, could we not have the pack animals look like me? But yeah. I guess, you know, if you're a demon, you're, you know, maybe your mind's on other stuff.
Yeah. But it's only the four-legged animals that look like him. The vulture-looking evil.
Yeah, true.
Right? They don't have that creepy kind of thing going on.
Yeah.
But the people, though. The people do have red eyes.
But they just look more like skeleton-y zombie-y.
Oh, true. Zombies, that's right. Ooh, zombie cowboys.
Now that's a movie we gotta see.
Yeah, I bet it's like already a movie, but it's one of those really bad ones.
Yeah. The Walking Dead cowboys.
I don't even watch The Walking Dead, though.
So on the next page, Matt comes crashing through a window.
And we learn that he's alive.
Yeah.
And he seems to be, like, I don't know, to me he's been in here for a few days already. And so, is this his life now? Is this, you know, does he spend all his time fighting these cowboys?
Yeah. Like, I kind of appreciate this doing what would be the in media res approach to it, but there's at the same time of like, I'm really curious as to what he's been doing since coming to hell. Are the devils coming after him because they're with the main big bad, or is this just, you know, an entirely different incident? Like, maybe he said something bad about those demon sisters.
Yeah. Oh, mamas.
Yeah, you don't talk bad about, you know, demon mamas.
Yeah.
That's just common sense.
Yes. Your mama so did. Probably so. Probably.
Or maybe it's the opposite. Your mama's so friendly, she says hello to kittens. What? How dare you?
Yes. Okay, we're going to fanfiction territory now, so okay, so from here we learn that Matt seems to want to take out the devil. Yeah, and Shadow Man is obviously the Shade, so we see also that, hey, they're allies now.
Yeah.
Not before, but yeah. Yeah. More than allies, maybe like friends.
Yeah, definitely they seem to have a stronger connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And before he gets too hurt, Jack comes in to save the day.
Except that he doesn't really get to save the day, because now this I'm looking at the page where, you know, we've got that first panel with Matt lying on the ground and Jack doing the zapping. The three panels of Jack are one of the rare times where where I thought that the storytelling was a little hard to read. Because we get the thes, but partly because of the border, we don't really get enough room to see that the staff isn't actually firing. And a sound effect like tizzn, like, is that it fizzling out or is that it shooting? And it also took me a moment to kind of realize that the tendrils coming out were then holding on to Jack, and in the next panel. So, I mean, eventually I figured out what was going on. Yeah. But those three panels were just a little harder for me to put together than it should have been, I feel.
Oh, I see. Okay. I see that. I was just kind of like, let's just get ahead and figure out what went on back there later. Yeah. So, yeah, that was my approach. I like the way they faded into the red monster scene.
Yeah, but yeah, that was really nice.
Yeah, the fade to white.
Yeah, and how it wasn't just a, what would you call it? Like a fade to white for our benefit. There was a literal fade to white even in the comic to get there.
Yeah. Oh, you know something? Excuse me. Side note on how I pronounce white. You know, for my entire life, I've pronounced it white, like with a solid W, until I came to Japan. Because in Japanese, for some reason, they have their own word for white. But when they say it the English way, they actually say white with an H. And it's so funny because these are the things that I realized messed up my pronunciation. Well, changed my pronunciation. I don't know if you can say messed up because there are so many varieties of English right now. It might be correct somewhere. Yeah, and that's why that I realized when we were doing Starman, I had this like epiphany where, hey, I'm pronouncing hero and heroine differently. Like, okay, because again in Japanese, the female lead of a drama or something, she is called a heroine. And that was where it came from, I think.
So, from hero. It came from the hero, so they went based on the spelling rather than from the pronunciation.
Yeah, so that's why I got like, wait a minute, how do you pronounce heroine again? Yeah, because it sounds different in Japanese.
It's interesting that you mention white because you know, I'm from the southern states in the USA. And, yeah, I found out this kind of growing up or afterwards is that, like, the South actually is kind of, at least when I was growing up there, held on to the WH has a hua sound to it. Yeah. So, I mean, I was in grade school, I was definitely taught that it's not why, it's why. Why and what and where. Okay. That's how I was taught. Casually, I don't always use it that way, like if I'm just talking, but when I teach this, we're going on a big tangent here, just bear with us. when I teach, I try and use correct diction when I'm especially in like lecture mode, and I'll notice it's so ingrained in me that even if when we're casually talking, I may not say what, I may just say what. But when I'm getting in front of the class and I'm really doing my best to speak in understandable and clear English so that all the students knows what's going on, then I will use the what's and where's and why's. Because to me, that's proper speaking, even though it doesn't need to be. It's just on some like fundamental level, that's how my mind interprets what's proper pronunciation.
Wow. Okay, that's fascinating for me because I love learning about things like that. Yeah, but you know what? In these upcoming pages.
Yes.
I realized that the shape probably speaks with an accent.
Mm.
And I didn't realize it until he was, like, confronted with marriage. But we are getting there. Let's start on the page where they meet the devil himself.
Yeah, yeah. Complete with a monocle.
Yes, yes. Oh, my. I was quite thrown off by the, like, how they chose to depict this mm-hmm. like, you know, the devil, Satan, yes. I guess.
Well, I mean, they do kind of make a point later on. I don't know if we should, sure, that he's a demon, not the devil.
Oh, wait, I see. So I missed that. All right, got it. Mm. I see. Well, then it makes sense. Yeah.
Did it's I just incredible, steal some thunder? Though.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No problem. It's really a mishmash of a lot of different imaginations, mm-hmm. I think. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of cool. Yeah. And I like the narration part.
Yeah. Where
Jack was like, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god. And he keeps repeating just it.
Over and over again.
Yeah. Like, you can really feel the tension, right, and his panic.
Mm-hmm. I think with that tension, we could definitely, I can't remember who says it's a demon, not the devil, but I think we mm-hmm. can definitely infer that in this scene, Jack thinks he's seeing, you know, the big bad himself.
Ah, I'm with you, Jack. Yeah, and then they have this conversation, and Shay goes, look how I've been made to dress. And I honestly thought he was wearing a white suit because he said that. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that it? That he's been made to wear a white suit?
Really? I thought that was just some kind of trick when it came to the coloring. Okay, so good. I didn't think it was strange. I didn't assume wrongly.
Yeah, no. I mean, that's totally what I took is, like, haha, Shade, as your punishment, you shall wear white. I am a demon.
Yeah. Yeah, so, well, nice meeting. I like how the three characters came together in this scene.
Yeah, yeah. Me too.
Mm.
And I like, even on the next page, just there's that moment where Jack's like, so you're speaking English, huh? And mm-hmm. the demon just has the, like, you're speaking the language of the fifth ring. Mm-hmm. And just in a way having, like, not only is it a nice little bit of flavoring, but just where we also get that where the demon kind of saying, I will it and it is so.
Yeah.
Like, it really establishes the power level they're dealing with.
Mm. Yeah. And imagine how the big bad would be if the demon is already so powerful.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So, next?
Next, well, we get the little bit that kind of, I guess, the challenge in a way issued by Jack. The, like, we're taking the friends and the whole, the demon's like, you want to kill me? And he's like, nope, we're just coming here to stop you. And
yeah.
And I don't know, it's a neat little exchange.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the thing is, like, the demon was, I don't know if he was underestimating them, but it was like, he said, try as you might, right? But he didn't, it was like totally out of his expectation what happened at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
So let's flip the page. It's the little things that I really like, such as having on that next page our three characters on their three different horizontal, vertical panels, being, you know, one on the left-hand side, Shade in the middle, and then Matt on the far right. I just, you know, it's just nicely done.
Yeah, yeah. Very tasteful. Mm. Yeah, it reminded me of this Japanese reality TV show where they would put a celebrity in a dangerous situation, like in a ice cold, in a valley of ice, or in a desert, and a deserted island, and then they would have to survive, like get out of that environment within 24 hours. So, and they would like play, they would edit it so that we, the viewers, can see three of them in their different environments at the same time.
Huh.
So this was very much like that. This was very much presented like a show, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That was very cool.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay.
And so. even with the next panel, when they each kind of get their visitors.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And if you look at that, these two pages where they stand alone and they get their visitors, if the two pages are together, there's also a certain like symmetry.
Yeah.
With the backgrounds. Yeah. That's very cool.
Yeah, no, it just, and just even the pacing of these two pages are really, really effective.
Yep.
Should we just go and go to the Jack page?
Yes, let's. It's Mom.
It is Mom, and we do get some background information of how she died.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And just kind of their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It feels very tragic.
It does. But I really wish that the sandcastles didn't look so phallic. Like, I wish they would have made it more like a, you know, like a rook chess piece, you know, with the...
Yeah. You know, I'll admit I didn't notice it at first, but now that you've said it, I can't see it.
Yeah, I just saw it when I read it the first time. It was fine. And then I just saw it because you said like it's tragic, and then I really felt like if only they changed the art here, it would fit more with the mood. Yeah.
to gloss over that art and go to the panel directly underneath it. That expression on Jack is just, oh man, you can see the sadness, but you can see the hurt and the anger at the same time. It's just really, really great artistry.
Yeah, agreed. Mm. And not only the art, I think the words as well, the story.
Yes.
One thing I took away from this one was how Jack, in this scene, because of what he says, oh, you are the devil, indeed, to make me recall such a thing. This means he is still aware that this isn't real. Like, he is still conscious that, okay, I'm in hell. This is a kind of illusion, and she's not really my mother. And all these feelings, though, because he wouldn't cry if he believed it to be real, but he's crying because he knows he's lost her. Yeah. So,
no,
that
really
was powerful.
I mean, this is a weird compliment criticism to have, but these two pages pack such a punch. That the next ones, even though I like the overall effect of this way that Robinson is telling the story, because I mean this one, you know, like even talking about it now, I can feel that like kind of pull, you know, like, oh, don't start crying, Thomas, don't start. But the other two, they're nicely done, but they don't have that same emotional attachment. Like, this is almost too good for the other pages to follow it.
Yeah. Agreed. But well, I guess we can't have everything.
No, we can't. You know, and like I said, the other pages are still good. Like with this Merritt page, the kind of reflection on London, and you know that kind of sense that the Shade has very mixed feelings towards London.
Yeah, wonder what it is. Mm-hmm. But it was this part that made me realize that the Shade has an accent. It never struck me that he's like not from around where Starman is from. Yeah, so he must be some sort of Londoner or something like that. Yeah. So he does know Merritt, I think.
Yes.
We realize over here. Mm-hmm. And he's like, he's also aware that, oh wait, is it happening in this? Yes. He is also aware that this isn't really Merritt. Yeah, he is a, but, okay, did you say in the synopsis that it's a test?
I did.
Okay, it's a test, and, but interesting how they didn't make the link that, okay, no, it's not an easy link to make. It's like, you know, you're put in an illusion. They know that it's an illusion, but they don't know it's a test.
Yeah. No. And that's really, really, I think, nice.
Yeah.
That both, and even when we go to Matt, like, I like that it's, each one has a figure that on some level, even though for different reasons, is important to them. But they're in places that all three kind of recognize that are not real, even if they are on some level true. Like this demon is not lying to them, even as he's presenting them with illusion.
Yeah. Yes, they, and all of them have that explicit sentence where they say, you are the devil, like, you know, you are not the person that you're appearing to be right now. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. What's next?
Indulge me.
Yeah. Was it? Yeah. The mum, right? I was so, like, disturbed by that bass, though.
Yeah.
Like, and you know that Jack was as well, because you see that expression of his in that bottom picture. He was like,
Yeah.
Yeah, and, I wonder why that was the word choice, though. Indulge me.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll just kind of go with it. Maybe it's because the other ones don't have to kind of get that. Maybe it's just kind of Jack's natural inclination to challenge, to point out the failings around him. I mean, that's not quite it, but, you know, of his calling attention to that type of inconsistencies, of not wanting to play along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And over here also, we learn a little bit about the cosmic rod. Yeah, it's like, and the way that, again, how Robinson writes it, I like, by your rod is powered by cosmic energy, by the sun and stars. Any stars that might once have shone in hell have long been burnt, long since burnt out. And like, they could just explain it in a very straightforward way, but every time I feel like James Robinson, he writes, he has this magic to the way he arranges his words, like where, you know, how the order of the words and what words go together.
Yeah. Right? It's just enough dusting on them where it's poetic, without feeling excessive.
Yeah. And you kind of believe that these people talk like that.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I don't know why exactly, but...
Or even if it makes you want to believe that people can talk like that.
Right, yeah. Like, you know that she must have been a pretty special woman. Especially, you know, a lot of the dialogue in this, in Jack's family, I feel, is a bit more on the witty side.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I would imagine that if you had, you know, intelligent parents, you would tend to sort of pick things up as well.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then kind of to moving on from the parents, you know, we do kind of get, like, it really edged in stone that Jack was 3-year-old when his mom died. So his memory of her probably isn't that accurate, but it's still a powerful connection.
Yeah.
And we also kind of get the shift here. Of basically the devil saying, like, hey, you know, tell you what, if you give me your soul, I'll set loose all the souls I've collected.
Yeah. That's what the mom devil says, right?
Yeah.
And we see all these, like, pale pink things. Wispy things, like, floating around them, circling them. Those are souls.
Da da da.
Yeah, and this is important because it appears in all the scenes that our three characters are in. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Do we go on to Shade Star?
Let's do it. Yeah.
Okay, Shade is with Merit, and. I actually quite liked this exchange because, again, Shade, very witty, very, very sophisticated dialogue, so I really liked it. Merit isn't too bad as well. Right? The kind of evil gentleman exchange words. Yeah. And I also like the... I don't know. I just really like the words here, like the immorality that we share. You know, they're not specific, like, how it is evil. It's just the opposite of morality.
Yeah, and that it's kind of rooted in the contempt they have, but it's kind of Shade saying he's different.
Mm-mm-mm.
He is not the same as Merit, even if he's done. What could be seen as terrible things, Shade does feel that his actions were merited, even if Merit doesn't see it.
Yeah.
An unfortunate coincidence of phrasing, but you know what I mean.
Yes, I do. Nice one, though. Yeah. And Merit also talks to us, talks to him, about all the bad things that Shade has done, and they're pretty horrific, you know.
Yeah,
massacre of the village and stuff like that. So we know that Shade has not been, like, a super good guy.
Mm-hmm.
He has his share of doing bad things. Yeah, but he keeps. Well, I wouldn't say he kept trying to defend himself, but he does justify his motivations pretty well, I think. But then violence is not the answer. In a superhero comic, so actually violence is the answer. Because you're, like, kind of beating people up and stuff.
And, you know, I like that you pointed that, you kind of said that right now, because I was just thinking, and we'll probably talk more about this at the end, that this might be one of the few stories where violence isn't the answer. Should we turn the page?
Yes, let's do it.
I like that we do kind of get a fuller backstory on what happened with Matt.
Yes. Like, we know that it wasn't exactly his own... He didn't do all the bad things of his own volition. It was some, you know, circumstances and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. He got embroiled in the plan. Who was it, though? Was it his supervisor or something?
Maybe his partner? A cop? Or at least a buddy?
Partner, okay. Yeah. So, that buddy was the one who started it. And then, like, basically he was sort of like the guarantor. And then they came after him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things I like about this is that, in a way, this story is one of those fitting exceptions to the rules. You know, I mean, the rule being that you're supposed to show instead of tell, right?
Yeah.
Whereas I really liked his story, and I liked hearing it. Like, I love having that information. You know, I kind of think this is a great way to give us that information. That I'm more interested in hearing Matt's take on why he became a dirty cop than perhaps I would have been in having this all unpacked and on a page showing us what happened. I just thought, like, well, that's a really, you know, a really good way of doing us, of showing this to us in a direct manner.
Yeah. Sometimes I get it, because like when I'm writing as well, should I do a flashback or should I do an exposition kind of thing in dialogue? You know, there's always that.
Yeah.
That you're torn, because what do the readers actually want?
Yeah.
But this was a time where I really liked how it was delivered in dialogue.
Yeah, yeah. Clap, clap, clap.
Were you going to say something? Yes. Sorry, I felt like I was interrupting you.
No, that was pretty much it, yeah.
Okay. All right. So, we have to mention that in everyone's little scene with their, I would say, nemesis, they are offered the same thing. That's why it's a test. So, basically, you have to exchange your soul for the soul of a lot of people.
Yeah.
Right, who have been trapped. So that's what the Sculp Hunter, Merritt, and Jack's mom are offering them. Yes.
And when we turn to that page where they're all making the offers, on the bottom of the page we get all three of our heroes agreeing to it.
Yes.
And, you know, it's just little things, but even how each hero accepts in their own specific ways, it's just really nicely done.
Yeah. It is so Shade. I like Shades because he's like, I've endured many hells in my many lifetimes. What's one more? If you want the black shriveled thing I call a soul, it's yours. And he's like, it's so him. And like, but Jack's like stammering and okay.
Yeah.
I guess.
And then even, we've gotten to know Matt the least out of these three, but even just his, you want my soul, you got it. No more than I deserve. Like, it makes me like the character more.
Yeah. In a way, I think Matt is very much prepared to die. I mean, right from the get-go when he entered the poster.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I mean, because
he was the one. Sorry?
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, he definitely saw this more as a penance, I think, than other people might have seen it as something that needed to be done for the good, and he just saw it as things he had to do to make up for all his bad.
Yeah. And if I'm not remembering this wrongly, the shade followed him inside. Like, he was going in. Right? He was like, I'm gonna like take you down even if it costs me my life. And then the shade was like, oh, this looks interesting, and then he just went in.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Matt definitely, he's like, okay, yeah, you want my soul, you got it. You know, he has that kakugo, what's that in English? he's resigned to his fate.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yes. I did not know that.
Yeah. Okay. Mm. And then the thing that the background fades. That's red. Oh, nice sound effect. And they're back in the throne room of the demon.
And we learned the battle's already won.
Because they have given the demon their everlasting souls so that strangers might be released from his hold.
And to do such a selfless act is something that demons makes is basically the one way demons can't take their souls, so they win!
Yeah, and the funny thing is, like, I bet it's Jack. He's like, get out of town.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. He's like, this doesn't, it can't be so easy. And you know, in a way, I think there's a humor in it, again, where, yeah, but it's true. You know, it's very... I don't know. I want to say it's very Joss Whedon, but I don't know whether people get the reference. Joss Whedon's very.
And it's not even just the get out of town, but it's the demon kind of following the get out of town with a think about it.
Yeah.
Like it just it's a great way of kind of undercutting the seriousness, preposterousness, I don't know which way you want to go, of this being how it wraps up. That really, it makes it, it adds to the satisfaction.
Yeah, I agree. I mentioned Joss Whedon is, I mentioned Joss Whedon because I watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And there was this episode in one of the seasons where the big bad Hydra guy. Mm-hmm. The actor actually just passed away this week.
Oh, Bill Paxton.
Yes. So he was the Hydra guy, and he was killed in mid sentence. Like that, his character, he was killed mid sentence.
Mm.
Like he was in the way, I will be back for you, and then he doesn't finish his sentence, and then he gets killed. Like, and that's the end of that villain. And that treatment, I remember reading an article about that episode, that treatment, that it was very Joss Whedon, it was almost like comic book, I think they mentioned that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know, I linked it up to this one, where it's like, it feels like such a simple treatment, but we are so satisfied by it, because it's justified, and... it makes sense, you know, the logic behind it. Yeah. He gave you a test, you passed it, and, you know, people barter away the most precious thing they have for a gain of some kind, but not them. So, quoting from the demon, yes.
No, and I like that, you know, there is that sense of rules to it.
Mm.
And also to kind of take the wrap up on this page and go with the next page with the demon, of the demon saying, like, you know, like, hey, you won, but you didn't really stop me, yet you haven't stopped me forever. Mm-hmm. And just kind of how, like, this will happen again.
Yeah.
That, you know, I mean, the demons can play long games on multiple levels.
Yes. Yeah. And the way the demon faded away into the shadows, that was very cool.
Yeah.
Using the hand and... Mm-hmm. Nice art. Very nice art. Yeah. And then we go to the bit where at the police station, the poster comes to life, and then Matt crawls out of it.
Mm-hmm. And says we need a bigger poster. And, you know, I'll be honest, I have no idea who the guy saying, well, there's one that comes to my mind. I have no idea who that's supposed to be.
It must be Clarence or Barry.
Yeah, but it doesn't really look like either of them. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, ultimately, it's not really that important.
Yeah. It's the guy on the good guy side.
Yeah, a good guy says it.
Yes. Okay, and then... I did not realize what was going on, why they needed a bigger poster, until I flipped the page.
Yeah. But before we get that reveal, we've got we've got Jack and Shade talking.
Yeah.
And you know,
they say.
Well, I was gonna say like, it's a nice little piece of talking that kind of you know, it's nice and it's set up, but at the same time, it also, as entertaining as it is, I don't really feel it kind of goes much anywhere. Maybe that's just me.
I don't know. I didn't really think about it. I just really like the way the scene ended, though.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Yeah, and how Shade just laughs, and that face! I like how it's drawn, and the face bit above it as well, Jack's face, where he's like, his brows are knitted, and then he's like closing his eyes, and he's like talking, and then Shade's laugh, like the
kind of smirk.
Acting, like you say. Yeah, the acting in the face. I really like it.
Yeah.
And how, like, the realization of the characters when they're faced with what's to come, you know, and Shade vocalizing it. Yes.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess I should be more specific, because even though I said I don't think this really goes anywhere, like, and I stand by that, but I don't necessarily mean that as a negative.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't really think there's too much to unpack here. I think it's good, it's entertaining reading, it's a nice little kind of like, oh, hey, man, stuff's gonna be weird, like, you know, I've kind of done this, yeah, well, blah, 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 you're old. And even if the whole purpose of having this one page of them just kind of talking is just a setup for that last page, I still think that alone almost makes it worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. Why not? Agreed. Yeah. Oh, the last page, though. It's like, whoa! For me. Of course, we have the lead-in where Shade says that all these people returning, some I'm sure will go back to their own lands, but others with nowhere better will stay in Opal.
Yeah.
And people from such distant times, so it's not just the place, but the time. And he says, it occurs to him that the city may be a little more interesting because of all these newcomers. Yeah, and then we see them like, oh, so that's why they wanted the big poster.
Yeah, because we've got all different types of folk from the past, 150 years popping out.
Yeah, I wonder why they didn't die though, like frozen in time or something like that. I bet
I mean,
like guns. Yeah,
the time of hell probably works different.
Yeah. Oh, well, but that's science. Not really, but... yeah, so it ends there.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, that's my rice cooker. It's not the fire alarm.
No problem.
Not the fire alarm. Sorry, you guys.
I'm cooking rice, too, by the way.
Oh, nice. Nice rice.
What did you think of this issue overall?
I thought it was a very satisfying wrap up, so I'm very happy with it because it's not like the last arc. We keep throwing shade on the last one. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But you know, I liked this one. I liked that everyone survived, and the Shade is back, and the Odairs are a complete family again. And no Odairs were harmed in the making of this film. Yeah, so that was nice. How about you?
Oh, I'm the same way. I really enjoyed this issue as a single issue. I really enjoyed it as the finale of the previous of this story arc. It just really clicked together. I thought the writing was nice. The pacing was good. You know, I mean, there, like I said, there were a few little, like, tiny moments here and there where I was kind of like, well, I don't know about that. But, I mean, that's also because part of the way I'm reading this is really, really trying to get in and analyze different elements of it. Mm. You know, but definitely this issue was really, really satisfying for me.
Good. Yeah, I wouldn't go really, really satisfying, but I would say satisfying. I might go to really satisfying if they didn't have the border thing.
I could see that. I just went ahead and flipped over to page, or not to page, but to the next issue, and I don't see a border there, so hopefully it's...
Yay!
But yeah, like, and I do like that, this issue really, outside of that little cowboy tussle, didn't really have any violence in it.
Mm.
It was a moral test, not a punch it till it quits test.
Yeah. Yes. Yay! Demon Quest. Complete. Yes.
Nice.
Alright, so I guess it's time for our nice non-segue into where can they find you on the internet?
Well, they can find me on Twitter at Dead Troubadour, on my own website, deadlytroubadour.com. I recently, 2 weeks ago, I guess, once the show goes up, recently saw and reviewed Doctor Strange. So if you want to see what I thought about that movie, please check it out there. There'll be other articles, of course, since then. Also, you can go to my Facebook page, my author page, Brent Thomas, author. And, you know, if you want to help out the show, why don't you go to Patreon, patreon.com/Brent Thomas, and say you want to donate like $1 a month to help support the show. It'd be keen. Where can they find you?
Oh, my turn? They can find me on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram at Quek Channel, Q-U-E-K Channel. And it's the same username for everything. Yes.
Yeah, yes.
Wait a minute. Yeah, we can go.
So close to finishing.
Yeah. Bye, guys.
Bye. There's a star man waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a star man waiting in the sky. He's told us not to blow it. He knows it's all worthwhile, he told me. Let the children lose it, let the children use it, let all the children boogie.